Omaha Public Radio presents another lecture program from the College of St. Mary on Noon Forum. We'll hear a talk by Alex Cava, a College of St. Mary alumna, and New York Times and International best-selling author of the Maggie O'Dell and Writer Creed series. Ms. Cava's remarks were given as part of the 12th Great Conversations Luncheon, presented annually by the College of St. Mary. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, April 23, 2015, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the College of St. Mary, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Sister Marianne Stevens, president of the College of St. Mary.
Great Conversations began in 2004 with Kathy Simon's vision to have individuals discuss great authors and their works. I thank Kathy for engaging College of St. Mary along with all of you, and I'd like to ask Kathy to come forward and just say a few words, as we usually do. Kathy.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here and see how Great Conversations has grown and flourished, and that how everyone looks so forward to this event. I'm especially pleased to welcome Alex Cava this year because she is a graduate of the College of St. Mary, which is a first for us. So I've read her book. I hope you all will read it. This was the first one I've read and will encourage me to read more of hers, but I especially love this one because I'm a dog lover. And this book is, the hero in the book are dogs. So that was especially fun. So I know we will continue this tradition. I keep encouraging Sister Marianne that we should have more than one a year. Even if it's just to get together as women and talk on different subjects that affect us all. So with that, thank you and good health to everyone.
Thank you, Kathy. You know, one of the reasons, besides discussing great authors and talking about books and issues that might be of importance to us, one of the other reasons Kathy encouraged us to start this was because there are few, we're a niche college as a women's college here in Omaha, Nebraska. And so not everybody has a daughter, a niece, a grandmother, an aunt who went to College of St. Mary. And so some people might not know it as well. And so as part of this event, we always ask a student to come forward and just to tell you a bit of her story at the college. And so today, Shawnee Daniel is going to come up, and she's a graduating senior. She'll shake my hand and walk across the stage in about 4 weeks, I think, right? Yeah. And so Shawnee's going to tell you a little bit about herself and her journey at College of St. Mary. Shawnee.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. My name is Shawnee McDaniel. As Dr. Marianne said, then I will be graduating in May, and then I will be pursuing my graduate degree over at Bellevue University in business. Right now, I'm currently double majoring in business and communications and English writing and literature. I'm also double minoring in theology and psychology, so quite a mouthful, I know. I came to St. Mary as a traditional student right out of high school from Papillion La Vista South, but I will be the first to say that my experience has been anything but traditional. Let me first start out with discussing where I was prior to St. Mary. I was definitely more of a rebel in high school, and I was very unmotivated and kind of bored with my classes, to be honest. You know, I got moderate grades, and I wasn't really interested in pursuing my future. I just didn't understand why people would find it necessary that I would go to high school when they didn't seem to care, so why would I care? This definitely changed when I went to College of St. Mary, let me say. I remember I decided on College of St. Mary because it attracted me for a couple of different reasons. The first was that although my parents were not religious, college and teaching religion definitely appealed to us. We wanted to gain that education that could offer and that sense of community that we could find. Another appealing thing for my father particularly was the all-women's college. He wanted to make sure, no MRS, we need a serious degree here, so took care of that one too. I know a big appealing part for me was that it was a smaller school, and I could finally gain that attention that I really craved and wanted from my teachers. And that's exactly what I got when I went to College of St. Mary. I remember when I told my friends that I decided to go to St. Mary. The only reaction that I ever got was, she's not going to make it 6 months. And then they even started taking bets as to how long I would make it. Well, a shocker to them and to me was that I not only have made it the entire time very happily, but I've bloomed and I've really found myself at this college. So half the time they don't even recognize me anymore. And shoot, they like me a lot more now too. Rather than having a couple teachers who were overwhelmed by the number of students, my professors actually listened to me and they actually challenged me. And this was such a shock. I remember the first time I was in my English class and my professor said, I just want you to write about an experience. I'm not going to give you any guidelines. I just want you to write. So my attitude, of course, at the time, I was like, oh, I don't write. I'm not your girl. You don't want me writing. That's not what I do. And instead of yelling at me or moving on to the next student and forgetting, he just simply asked, why? And this was shocking to me because I was like, I don't have a reason why I don't write. Why don't I write? I have no idea. And so for the first time, I picked up my pen. I started writing really hard and from my soul. And this just opened up a new part of my soul that I had not found. I found a way of therapy and a way of letting things go that I didn't even know I was holding on to. I remember after I finished it, it felt like 30 pounds had been taken off. I was like, this is a new diet pill for me. That's fantastic, you know? And so ever since then, I realized I have a serious passion for English writing and literature, and that's one reason why I had to double major in it, was just to figure out more of me. I also, you know, I learned a lot of myself through one of my psychology courses, and this was, I still have a picture of this moment. It was in my general psychology course. It was my first one, and the teacher said that she was going to bring in two brains, real cadaver's brains. So I was like, this is general psychology. Are you sure about this? You know, there could be sick women in here. And so when she brought them in and she pulled them out, one of them was normally formed and everything was fine, but the other one was from a mentally handicapped person and the frontal lobe had not fully formed. And just to visually see the difference there, I mean, I was beaming in this picture when I got to hold it. I was like a child on Christmas morning going down to the tree. I was so happy. And I remember running home to my mom and just screaming, like, they let me hold a brain. And of course, she's like, I don't know if that's a good thing, but, you know, so. And I remember we were both like, how many colleges out there would allow a student to do that and to learn firsthand? That was a huge moment where it was like, this is my school. This is where I'm at. So another time when I saw that, one of the things in high school was that I really notoriously said that I did not like people. I was like, I don't want to deal with them. They're tricky. They're tough. I'm just going to lock myself in a room and call it good. And so while I was still thinking this, on one of my first business internships, I was given the privilege to work with Access Bank through the personal networking at College of St. Mary. And so the president, his name is Pat Corrigan, he came in, he asked me, he's like, what do you want to do for your first internship? I said, you know, Mr. Corrigan, I don't really care what I'm doing. Just don't put me in front of customers. I don't want to work with them. Just lock me in an office and give me some paperwork and I'll be a happy camper. Well, sadly, he did that, actually. Yeah, so he listened to me and he gave me my own office and he gave me piles of tax reports to code and to analyze. I made it a week and then I was literally scratching at the door looking for anyone to walk by my office for me to talk to for 5 minutes. And so that was when I realized, okay, I need to reevaluate everything that happened in high school. Obviously, I don't know myself as well as I immediately thought. And College of St. Mary has really shown and opened my eyes that I am just a different person. And it's shown me why I'm on this planet, you know. College of St. Mary has always, you talked about the strengths of servant leadership. Prior to, I was like, yeah, servant leadership, whatever, you know, follow Jesus, we're all good. But I quickly realized that there's more to this idea than I thought. this really is an amazing thing. I am on this planet in order to have connections with people, and I'm not here to say, this is for me getting somewhere in my life. I don't care about that. I'm here to say, what can I do to help you get somewhere in your life? Where do you want to be in the next 5 years? Because that makes me happy, and that helps everyone. This is something that College of St. Mary really showed me. My duty is to serve others, and that's what I love to do. College of St. Mary's, like I said, they opened my eyes, and they truly changed my life. I will forever be grateful to supporters and friends for this great experience.
We'll practice. Shawnee, thank you. And I want to also say that Shawnee has a job at Access Bank waiting for her as she graduates. And Mary Corrigan, Pat Corrigan's wife, I saw. Where's Mary? Mary Corrigan. So a shout out to Pat and to Access Bank. Thank you. We are truly honored to have Alex Cava, who we also know as a College of St. Mary alumna. And we know her, by the way, as Sharon Cava. She'll tell you a story about that. From the class of 1982. Growing up in the country outside Silver Creek, Nebraska, Sharon fantasized about becoming a writer. Her parents, although they understood the value of education, had a very serious and tremendous work ethic. Reading was seen as frivolous unless required as schoolwork. As a teenager, Cava wrote short stories on the backs of calendars, sharing them only with her younger brother and hiding them in a shoebox under her bed. Sharon earned an art scholarship to attend College of St. Mary, and to pay living expenses, she worked in a nearby hospital's central supply department collecting and sterilizing all of the basins, instruments, and equipment from surgery, pathology, and the morgue, and graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Art and English. After graduating, she held a variety of jobs, mostly in advertising and marketing, and indeed she worked at College of St. Mary when I first started there. Starting her own graphic design firm, Square One, she designed food packages and logos for national corporations, wrote brochures and newsletters, created a line of greeting cards, and directed TV and radio commercials. From 1992 to 96, that's when she served as the director of public relations at the college. Wanting to dedicate more time to writing fiction and getting published, she refinanced her home, maxed out her credit cards, and even took on a newspaper delivery route. Today, Sharon Cava, a.k.a. Alex Cava, is the international best-selling author of 13 thriller novels published in 26 countries, and she has won many awards for her writing. Her most recent book, Stranded, won the 2014 Nebraska Book Award for Fiction and the Florida Book Award. Please join me in giving a warm welcome to Alex Cava.
Thank you all so much for being here today. It's such a great day outside. I'm thinking that this would be, the perfect day to travel the back roads of Nebraska. Wouldn't it be beautiful to just look at all the sights and find all kinds of good places to dump dead bodies? I'm thinking no. You know, when I first started writing, there were an awful lot of writers in particular who gave me the same advice over and over again. They kept saying, write what you know. You need to write what you know. Well, I grew up in Silver Creek, Nebraska, population 500. My high school graduating class was 23. And I went on to college with an art degree on an art scholarship to an all-women's Catholic college, College of St. Mary, and I murder people for a living. I promise you I'm not writing what I know. However, after writing 15 books, and I just finished the 15th book, actually, I thought it was a good idea to keep a list of those things that I do know. So this afternoon, I'm going to share with you, this is what I do know. And this is, you know, a whole list of things that I've put together over the years. But one of the first things that I found out very, very quickly was that readers really get attached to characters in kind of a frightening way. I remember being a young author, I can't remember how many books, and I was in Oklahoma City for a book signing. And this woman brought in her a friend, and they raced in the door. They had come in a little bit late to the book signing, and she races up to me, and she said, "I love your books. I love Maggie O'Dell. I just love her so much. I don't know what I would do if you stopped writing her. Well, have you ever seen the movie Misery?" Yeah. I take it you guys have seen the movie Misery. Well, in the movie, Kathy Bates' character hobbles the author so that he will continue writing a book. And I can't say that I would ever want to be hobbled for Maggie O'Dell. When I first started writing my first book, A Perfect Evil, I never intended to write a series. I never intended to write Maggie O'Dell. In fact, she comes into A Perfect Evil, I believe, I think it's like chapter 7. And she's one of 5 points of view. And the truth is, and don't tell anybody, okay, but I didn't even really like her that much. She was annoying. I mean, she was stubborn, she was so slow to trust, and then, of course, my friends pointed out, well, you're very slow to trust, and you're kind of stubborn. It's like, oh, okay. And then finally, a friend of mine, Leanne Rettelsdorf, who some of you know as the past deputy prosecutor, she had lunch with me one time, and I was telling her that I'm on book 4, and I'm having a tough time writing Maggie, and the readers want Maggie, and I want to please them, and my publisher wants more Maggie, so everybody obviously loves her. And it was Leanne that said, well, those of us who are in law enforcement do have lives, and we are real people. Make her a little bit more real. Give her some of the things about you that you like. Give her your sense of humor. And I thought that was so nice that Leanne thought that I had a sense of humor. So I did. I gave her my love of college football, and I gave her a dog. And little by little, I've kind of grown to like her a little bit more. We've sort of become friends rather than adversaries. I've written 11 Maggie O'Dell novels now, and I'm glad to say that I'm kind of at the point where I'm just hitting my stride with her. And I think we've got a lot of ways to go yet. But I have just started a new series, and I'm hoping so much that you like this new character, Ryder Creed, and especially his dogs. Because I think that of all the female characters that I've created in my 15 books, I think that Grace is my favorite. And for those of you who don't know Grace, she's a scrappy Jack Russell Terrier who is one of his scent dogs, one of his favorite scent dogs. And she is just very, very cool. And I hope that you come to meet her and you hope to love her as much as I do. But with the new series, I got to write about something that I know. I know dogs. I finally got to write something that didn't have to do with murder. I mean, there's still murder. I mean, there's always going to be dead bodies. You can't get away from that. But the funny thing about that is that, you know, the more that I learn about dogs, the more I realize I don't know. Which comes back to, you know, this is what I know. The fascinating thing about dogs is that they can be used for so many different variety of things, not just cadaver dogs in search and rescue. They can be used to search for drugs. In many cases, they're using them as therapy dogs. And now they're starting to find out that dogs can sense cancer and different viruses. I mean, how cool would it be to have dogs at airports to sense out Ebola? Don't take that idea anywhere. So that brings me back to, this is what I know. When you don't know something, learn. And I've had to do a lot of learning over the years. I've had to research so many different things because I don't have a law enforcement background. I've had to depend on people like Leanne Redelsdorf and other homicide detectives and FBI agents and morticians and medical examiners who have been so generous with their time and tell me things and email me back and forth and answer my crazy, crazy questions. And so I've learned over the years such a variety of things, like, for instance, which side of the hurricane is the worst that you don't want to be on? And I've actually learned that by personal experience, unfortunately. I've learned how a taser works. I mean, how cool is that? I've learned that humans have 5 million scent receptor cells and dogs have 100 million. And I know how long it takes for a body to decompose. All very handy things to know. Which, by the way, it's a week in the open air, for those of you who need to know. It's 2 weeks in water and about 8 weeks underground, give or take. See, these are pieces of pieces of information that, you know, don't necessarily go well with dinner conversation or at parties. But in all of my novels, I use bits and pieces of real crimes and a lot of facts. And this is what I know, that when readers don't know the difference between what's real and what's not real, then I've done my job. When they can't distinguish what the facts are and what's fiction. And to give you an example, when I wrote One False Move, it's robbers who have gotten away in Nebraska, and they're on the run, and they go through quite a few little small towns. Well, when I was in Pittsburgh for the book tour, there was a woman who introduced herself to me, and she said, I love the book so much. My family and I traveled through Nebraska last year, and we took Interstate 80. I could remember all of those little towns that you mentioned. In fact, it was so vivid in my mind, that exit sign for Normal, Nebraska. There is no Normal, Nebraska. In more ways than one. Thank you. I'm going to use that. That's great. I love that. But I love the use, and that brings me to something that I do know. This is what I know. I know Nebraska, and I love using pieces of Nebraska as backdrop for my novels because we really are sort of in what other people call a flyover zone. They, you know, especially people on the coast, they have no clue where Nebraska is, let alone anything about Nebraska. So I love sharing bits and pieces about it, and I learned things about Nebraska, too. A few years ago, I didn't know that we had a national forest. Did you know that we have a national forest? I didn't know that, and it's gorgeous, it's beautiful, and as soon as I found out, I knew that something bad had to happen there. So I wrote Hotwire. But it is sad when I go on book tour, especially, there's, you know, people who don't really, I mean, they don't even pretend to really know. They don't even try to be polite. I remember for one of my books, I had done like an 18-city national tour, and I was ending in San Francisco at a bookstore there, and I was telling the bookstore owner that, well, when I get home, I'm going to do an 11-city tour in Nebraska. And he looked at me very strange, and he finally said, are there even 11 cities in Nebraska? Yeah, it's like that. Another bookstore owner, I remember when the very first time that she found out that I was from Nebraska, she said, oh, I've been to Nebraska. I've been to the Corn Palace. Yeah, I didn't have the heart to tell her that, no, she really hadn't been to Nebraska if she's been to the Corn Palace. And there are some times that I do know, and this is another thing that I know, that I get carried away. I get carried away with the murder and the bodies and the things that I now know, maybe a little bit too much. In my book, Stranded, which is about a killer who takes his victims from rest areas and truck stops, yeah, pretty scary stuff, because we've all been there. And I blame this idea entirely on a friend of mine. She's here today, so I don't want to embarrass her. I'll just give you her initials, are Marlene Haney. She told me about her family farm where her father and stepmother lived for many years. And it was just outside of Sioux City, Iowa, but it backed to an interstate Interstate 29 rest area. And she told me the most frightening story about how a prisoner had escaped and they were, you know, shining the lights and trying to find this guy. And I just thought, oh my gosh, I have to have a killer at a rest area that uses rest areas. And so I asked her, would she mind, you know, if I could possibly use her property? And then she brought me, you know, pictures, which was great because I do love to use places that I actually know too, you know, even restaurants and businesses and stuff. And she was very gracious about letting me do that. Well, I was about a quarter of a way through the book, and I was spending an awful lot of time on that farm, and they were discovering an awful lot of dead bodies that had been dumped there. And I had to talk to Marlene again, and I said, you know, this is a very special place for you. There's a lot of special memories, and I'm dumping a lot of bodies there. Are you sure you're okay with this? And without hesitation, she said, dig in. These are my friends. And thank goodness for friends, because this is what I know. They humor me, they keep me balanced, and boy, do they keep me grounded. I remember one of my very first times when I had a book signing, and this was probably book two or book three, and it was my first signing that I had over 100 people. And I came, I got home, and I called my friend Deb Carlin, and I said, my gosh, there must have been like 100 people. They were in the aisles. There wasn't places for them to sit down. It was like, it was amazing. And she says to me, was the bookstore giving something away? It gets worse. I said, I don't know. I mean, it was one of those things where, you know, you needed some grounding, I suppose. The other thing that I can tell you that I know is that if readers see something in my books that you think is just too incredible to be real, that's probably something that's real. That's probably a morsel that I've picked up from one of the experts that I've sat down and had dinner with, because truth is so much stranger than fiction. And it's even stranger when things I write about come true. I used to write at Platte River State Park. I don't write there anymore. I was there one March, and my dogs and I were the only ones in a cabin surrounding the lake. And later in the afternoon, we heard this helicopter going overhead, and it was a police helicopter. So I went in and turned on the portable TV, and there had been a bank robbery in Lincoln, and the robbers had gotten away. And they shot a couple in Greenwood, Nebraska, and stole their pickup. And I was in the middle of that search area. Platte River State Park was in the middle of that search area. Well, it didn't take me too long, maybe about an hour, and I decided to pack up the dogs. I left everything there and had to go through a police blockade to actually even leave the park. So I actually was in the middle of that. But I got home and I thought, wow, what a great idea. And I just started writing and writing and writing, notes and notes and notes. Only in my scenario, the bank robbers get away with no money and they end up leaving three people dead in the bank. But I had to put that book aside because I still owed my publisher, Maggie O'Dell. Maggie, I tell ya. But when I got back to that book and I was three-thirds of the way through it, three men walked into a Norfolk bank, didn't take any money, and left five people dead. And I kept thinking, wow, this is almost exactly like my book. This is crazy. They must be following me, right? But those are the kinds of things that are a little bit unsettling. Another time in Damaged, I had actually experienced Hurricane Ivan. I bought a property outside of Pensacola. I loved that area. 6 months later, Hurricane Ivan hit. It was an experience. It was quite an experience. So I decided, well, you know, if I'm going to go through it, Maggie's going to go through it. So in Damaged, I have a hurricane. I have her going down to Pensacola. And she's going to be working on a case. They actually found a cooler filled with body parts. Don't know how that happens, but it happened. And she's going down to investigate. Only I made my hurricane because I didn't want people to think that I was going through Ivan all over again, even though I used all of the tracking of Ivan throughout the entire story. I made my hurricane Hurricane Isaac because it had never, ever been used before, and so nobody could say that it was, you know, premonition or anything. Well, 2 years later, Hurricane Isaac came barreling at Pensacola, and who do people blame? I mean, it's not even really fair to blame me. So, but there are things like that over and over and over again that are just very unsettling. When what I've written about, and I've done it a couple of other times too, I don't talk about it a whole lot. But for Black Friday, I had actually handed in a proposal. In Black Friday, three teenagers walk into a mall with explosives, and they end up blowing up, and it was going to be Westroads Mall. But I actually handed in that proposal a week before Robert Hawkins. And so I ended up calling my editor, and I said, we cannot have that happen in Omaha. And we ended up blowing up Mall of America, and Minneapolis, surprisingly, is very happy to have that mall blown up. I mean, people have said thank you, in fact, so that came to, like, some good, but it is a little bit freaky when things like that do end up happening. And I did want to share with you a little bit about how I came to be Alex, because I guess I always assume that everybody knows that in Nebraska, and that's not a good idea to assume. So I did want to share a little bit with you about that. I had actually written another novel, and it still sits in the bottom desk drawer. Never, ever has been published, probably never, ever will. And I sent it in under Sharon Kava. It was a suspense thriller. I got 116 rejections from literary agents. And to be fair, a lot of them were women, but I kept getting the same notations in the margins. They would say things like, this is a little bit too harsh for a romance, or you need to tone things down a little bit and add some romance. And I got the impression that they expected a romantic suspense from Sharon Kava. So when I actually finished A Perfect Evil, I decided that if that really was an obstacle, I want to remove that obstacle. So I went through names that were spelled the same for both male and female, and I chose Alex. That's the only reason. And I submitted the book to 32 agents as Alex Kava. Three of them offered to represent me. All three called asking for Mr. Kava. So, you know, I could have been offended by that, but as a writer, we want to think that our narration of the story is genderless, is ageless, and so it was not such a bad thing. And I got an agent. And that's what I wanted to use the name for, was just to get an agent. And I did that. And you have to be careful about those sort of things, too, because you have to, you know, be careful about what you wish for sometimes. But it ended up being a great, great thing. The thing that surprises me is how many of those barriers are still there. And I can't, you know, I tried to write down a couple of them. But there are so many, so many more. Just recently, probably about 4 weeks ago, when I was doing book tour, there was an interviewer who asked me why I write so many strong female characters. Because usually when I write even my Maggies, there's several others. There'll be, you know, Coast Guard rescue swimmers. There'll be women who are medical examiners. There'll be other females in my books that are very, very strong female characters. And when he asked me that question, I very much wanted to ask him if he asks male authors why they have so many strong male characters in their books. But I was a little bit more polite than that. But I get that a lot. I mean, I've been interviewed on a couple of radio shows, especially, it's my genre. It's still that genre. It's still very, very dominated by men. There are a lot more women, but the men are still getting a lot of the attention. And I remember one radio guy in particular who was just, you know, making it very obvious that he didn't read women thriller authors. And in fact, I kind of won him over at some point. And the reason that I knew that I won him over is because when we came back after a commercial break, he said, and we're with Alex Kava today, and you're going to really enjoy her books. She certainly doesn't write like a girl. So you take your compliments wherever you can get them. You know what's kind of frustrating, though? Is that I realize that it extends to my female protagonist, too. She's not allowed to cry, but she's still not allowed to swear. She's not allowed to sleep around, and she's certainly not allowed to drink. You know, I had Maggie throwing back a few scotches in the first book. She has a suicidal alcoholic mother. I thought this might be a problem for her. It would be an interesting thing, at least, to sort of, throw it out there. And I was at a book signing up in Minneapolis, and the bookstore owner, and this was probably about book three, she took me aside, and I knew she loved my books. They had me there. They had hosted me several times. She took me aside, and she said, Maggie's really going to need to get this drinking under control. And I thought, gosh, is she serious? She's got to be kidding, right? No, she was serious. She was very serious. So it's like, you know, Jack Reacher can sleep with as many women and throw back as many drinks as he wants and doesn't have to worry about that. But when it comes to female protagonists, boy, got to be careful. And even readers, I think readers probably would not necessarily want an FBI agent who's sleeping around and, you know, dropping the F-bomb and all of that sort of stuff, too. So it's very, very interesting to me. It's quite a challenge, but that's okay. I look forward to challenges. I'm going to wrap up in a little bit here because I think, were we going to leave some time for questions? Okay. But I do want to say that, you know, this is another thing that I know, is that success doesn't come easy. In the beginning, I kind of told God that just let me have my foot in the door and I'll do the hard work. Boy, is there a lot of hard work. But oftentimes, you know, rewards are not necessarily the things that you think that they're going to be. Rewards are a little bit they're a little bit like blessings where they come in unpredictable packages. And you mentioned the Nebraska Book Award and the Florida Book Award. And there was an interviewer just recently who asked me, boy, what did it feel like when you made the New York Times list for the first time? And I honestly could not remember anything but relief. It wasn't like it was a big thing to celebrate. It's such a political thing. It's such a huge, major thing to the publisher. It meant really not that much to me. But it did mean a lot to get those awards from my two states that I call home. And that was very special to me. So the rewards kind of come in different ways. They come in, you know, people telling me how much they enjoyed the book or coming and telling their stories. Because I think everybody, I don't know if everybody has a novel in them, but everybody has such fascinating stories. And they don't even realize it. And it's too bad that we don't realize, you know, how many wonderful, wonderful successes and how many stories that we have that are inspirations to a lot of people that we probably don't even know. So, you know, the rewards to me are when somebody picks up my book now and they tell me, gosh, it got me through chemo, or gosh, my son's going to be, or my daughter's going to be going into forensics because of your Maggie O'Dell. Those are the rewards that you never expected, but are the most special, I think. And just also, too, what a reward to be able to come here on a gorgeous day like today and just meet and talk to so many of you. I can't believe that you gave up your afternoon to be here. So I do appreciate it so much, and thank you for coming.
We have time for a few questions, and Brittany Long, one of our staff members here, has a microphone. So if you just raise your hand, and she'll come to you so everybody can hear the questions. And I think Ann has one.
When you're driving along the highways of Nebraska, do you kind of write your book? Do you have a recorder?
No, I don't. I don't. I do take a notepad.
When you're driving?
Well, I don't, Usually if I find inspiration, I usually stop. So because there's usually, you know, you guys go to a new place and you probably, the first thing that you check out, right, is a cool new little diner to try out or whatever. I'm driving around to the back alley to see what the dumpster looks like and whether it'll fit a full body or just parts. So I'm not usually, I'm not driving and writing or texting. But and I haven't used. I actually haven't. I don't record it because the times that I have recorded it, I tend to not translate it. You know, you still have to go through translation for it, and so it hasn't really worked for me, unfortunately.
Alex, I do have a question. Do you have a favorite author?
I have many, many favorite authors, and a lot of them are fortunately people who have become friends of mine too. A lot of them are in the same genre. Karen Slaughter, Lee Child, I know him fairly well now. James Rollins, Lisa Gardner, J.T. Ellison, Erica Spindler, and I spent some time on book tour this past January and a couple of years ago too. So it's kind of fun now to be able to read people that I actually know. That's kind of fun.
Well, I'm in the middle of Stranded, but I have a question about whether this is factual because it kind of freaked me out. The reference to the serial killer, kind of a pattern of murders that may cross states and are unsolved.
Yes.
Is there any?
Oh, yes. Okay. Actually, in Stranded, I mentioned that the FBI has actually come up with a highway serial killer initiative, and that's a real thing. They came up with this, I believe it was in 2008, 2009. I don't know why it took them so long. But they had a lot of unsolved murders across the country. There's over 500 of them. And they thought perhaps the reason that they were not being solved were because the murderer was taking them from one state, probably killing them somewhere else and dumping them somewhere else. Have to be using the highways to do that. And what a great escape route. So by creating this initiative, they have a database of all of those cases in there now. So if there's a case that happens in Interstate 80 outside of Lincoln, and there's some really strange stuff about it, they can go to that and look at the database and see if there's any similarities, and possibly they've solved some by doing that. They did actually arrest one truck driver. And his name escapes me right now, and I can't remember how many murders he committed. But you know, he was a long haul truck driver, and unfortunately, so many of them are people who nobody misses. You know, they're the what they call lot lizards, and I haven't seen a lot lizard yet. I'm so disappointed. Because everybody keeps telling me that they see them at these truck stops, and I just want to see one for I guess I'm not her audience, but unfortunately they're people who are addicted to drugs and the less fortunate, and that's, you know, another reason why their murders haven't been solved. But yes, that was one of the real things that.
Alex, will we continue to have Maggie and Ryder cross over from their own individual series? I know we first met Ryder in Stranded, and Maggie pops up in Breaking Creed. Can you give us a clue whether they're going to be crossing over?
Yes, actually, I just finished Silent Creed, which is going to be out in July, July 28th, and he actually is sent to North Carolina after a mudslide, he and the dogs, to recover hopefully survivors, and they end up discovering a couple of bodies that have gunshot wounds that they dig up. So it ends up being a lot more dangerous than it's intended. But Maggie comes in because she's investigating those murders. The one thing that I love about Ryder that makes it a challenge is that he is not law enforcement. So that's what Maggie gives to his books, is that I still I'm able to bring her in, and she is able to sort of lead the investigation and take readers through the evidence and the trace and all of that. Whereas he, once he finds what he's searching for, is not necessarily a part of the investigation anymore. So that was one of the reasons why. And I think they actually play off each other really well. I love their chemistry, and I hope readers are going to love it too. So that's the idea is for, because I'm going to continue the Maggie O'Dell series. But we'll have writer and then a Maggie and writer and a Maggie. We have two writers in a row here now, but that's the idea. And the idea is to have two books a year.
I was wondering, have you ever thought of writing anything other than murder mysteries? And
I actually have a believe it or not, a children's book that doesn't have any murder. That doesn't have any murder. My Boy Scout that I lost in May last year told some of the most fabulous tales, and they have to be recorded. And so I'm actually finding an artist right now who does Westies, and that's the piece that I need the most before I can tell his stories, and they'll probably be Scout's twisted tales or something.
Another question I have too. If you have time, what do you like to read?
Oh, gosh. I never used to read series, I'll tell you that. I had to learn to do that by the seat of my pants. I read a lot of them now, and I read a lot of this genre, but I'm constantly fascinated with different history stuff, and I read a lot of history, a lot of research for what I do. For instance, for this last book, I read a lot about mudslides. That was fascinating, and now I'm reading a lot about service dogs and just what dogs are capable of doing. So my pile to be read looks very, very strange in some respects because there's quite the hodgepodge.
Was there a book or an author that kind of inspired you to want to start writing?
It may seem odd, but my favorite book is To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee.
I love that.
And my Scout was actually named for Scout. And that, you know, and people think of that as kind of strange. A lot of interviewers think, well, I can't believe it's not Raymond Chandler. It's not somebody that's in. But, you know, the great thing about great fiction are the characters. You know, you have to develop characters that people are going to want to follow and love and be a part of, no matter whether they're sitting at the table trying to figure out how to pay bills or they're chasing a serial killer. Because if you don't have the character, it doesn't matter what fabulous action you have for them. It's just not gonna matter. So that's my favorite, and that's my go-to. Thank you all again. I so appreciate it.
You've been listening to a lecture program from the College of St. Mary on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Alex Cava, a College of St. Mary alumna and New York Times and International best-selling author of the Maggie O'Dell and Writer Creed series. Ms. Cava's remarks were given as part of the 12th Great Conversations Luncheon, presented annually by the College of St. Mary. This program is recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, April 23rd, 2015, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Brittany Long, Director of Marketing and Public Relations at the College of St. Mary, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 400 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.